Go. Okay. So let's talk about who you are and what you're all about. Now I want, okay, I understand some of this is sometimes hard to get it out. That's what this is about. Really, this first little part, I want for us to take a good look at like what you are about. What do you know? What is it that you have experienced in your life that's kind of leading to some of the things that are burnt? And by the way, the whole time, if we're talking and you've got an idea, write it down on your little journal. That's why I want it beside you, because you can come back to that, but it gets it out of your brain to where you don't feel like, I don't want to forget this. I don't want to forget this. I know she's going to ask about this later. But what I'm saying here is I want for us to pause here and let's look at like, who are you? Like, what's your story? I just shared a little bit about like sitting there in that retreat. Tell me a little bit about when God first started moving in your life and what he's been doing in your life. Do you mind? And I am going to, yeah, you guys, we can open mics here. Okay. Good morning.
Mandy.
Oh, this is good stuff, you guys. I'm so glad you're here. This is quiet. This is like a very intimate thing. We've got several that were like, I'm just going to do DIY. It's a bad day. I was like, this is not supposed to do that way. But it's good because I like the intimacy here. So anyway. So tell me a little bit about who you are and what you're all about. I don't want to think I know you. Okay.
That's a loaded question, Cindy.
It's a tough one. That's the tough one.
Like where to start?
Yes.
Yeah, where to start.
Go, Mandy.
All right, we'll start. Who am I? I am a mother of teen girls. I have a dog walking pet sitting business and I homeschool my girls. So that is what keeps me busy. I'm also a dance mom. I don't know if you can see that. It says I can't. My girls have dance. they're competitive dancers. They're actually, my husband's taking them to rehearsals today so that I can do this. I can remember, so I'm trying to think how long ago it was. I think it was shortly after my first daughter was born. I remember sitting on the couch with her and at the time my husband and I were helping to lead a small group, which was not going very well because we had a newborn. And you know, it's hard to go every week when you've got a newborn who's crying at that time. But but I remember sitting with her one night on the couch nursing and feeling like I was supposed to write a book because there were other women in this group. It was a co-ed group. It had started as a singles group and then about three quarters of us got married, which tends to happen with singles groups. Mm-hmm. but just feeling like I didn't really know what I was doing as a mom and as a wife and as a woman trying to follow God at that point in my life. I really didn't know what I was doing. My mother had been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer my freshman year of college, the spring of my freshman year of college. So, and she fought that for 18 years. She actually passed away when my youngest was about 3. Wow. But in the course of fighting that disease, she was not my mom anymore. It took its toll. Her primary tumor was wrapped around her carotid artery, so they could not remove it.
Oh, wow.
And so, I mean, they did chemo, they were able to shrink it. It did stabilize. It was extremely slow growing, but the side effects from the medications and the effects of the cancer itself, she was not mentally who she had been.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was still mostly there when I got married. which was the end of grad school, but not the way that she had been when I was younger. And so that piece, like I remember I wanted her there when my first daughter was born, and she kind of sat on the couch and she would come ask me if I needed help with dinner as I was pulling dinner out of the oven with my literal newborn. I mean, I stayed in the hospital one night because we were healthy, and I'm like, I'm out of here. I'm done with all these beeps and everything. And so, so I had my husband's running up and down the stairs, like, I don't know what to do.
That's funny.
But, and so I think it's funny because I never really put all these things together until now, but mm-hmm. There was a void there. And I was living in Colorado at the time. My parents were in New Jersey, which is where I was born and raised. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it was 1500 miles away. And it was around that time when I would start calling and saying, hey, Mom, you remember that recipe you used to make for this? And she couldn't remember it anymore.
Mm.
And she hadn't written it down.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was almost like not having a mom anymore.
Yeah.
And so I think there's that gap in going from, I'm the excited, youthful, I can do anything, young woman, to, now I'm a mom and I'm supposed to take care of them and I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And no one, and maybe it's because we were leading that group and we had gone, and everybody was singles and everybody was newlyweds or singles, that maybe I just wasn't around the right people to do it. And, you know, so flash forward now, we were in Colorado. Okay, I was in Colorado for 19 years, my husband for 18 years. We actually met and married in Colorado prior to getting, and so we were there. Gosh, I'm thinking, we just celebrated our 19th anniversary over the summer. So
mm-hmm.
I was there about a year,
mm-hmm.
2 years. Now we've been here 5 years, so. I don't know, my timing's all off, but now we live in Texas, and so again we try to go get plugged into a church, and our kids are older now, they have activities, they have passions, and we're trying to encourage them, because
mm-hmm.
I do believe if God gives you something that you love, that makes you feel the way that dance makes my girls feel when mm-hmm. they dance, that they should be able to pursue it. Well, now they're at a point. Our church stopped offering Sunday school for high school. They don't have it because the youth pastor is also the worship pastor. And so instead of having someone come teach a Sunday school class or finding some way to make this work, they just dropped it. And so they only have Wednesday night programming. Well, if dance is a 5 day a week commitment to do it. And so they've had to choose. And so now we're completely cut off. I actually went to the youth pastor and said, hey, I'm pretty sure we're not the only family with teens with after school activities that can't come on a Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Can I lead a small group of girls? And they didn't even let me finish the sentence. They shut me off and said, no, we're not offering that at this time. And I'm like, okay, I'm a 40 something year old, because this was a couple years ago now, like 43 year old mother of two teens. You're what, 20? And you're just gonna cut me off and say, no, you can't do this.
I would say yes, so, ma'am.
I mean, my husband and I are completely cut off too, because yeah. we don't have, I think part of it is it's a big church, it's hard to get involved, but even their adult small yeah. groups, they have twice a year, they have a small group connect festival.
Uh-huh.
They only do it on Tuesday night. And it's always conflicted with my dog clients, my husband's work schedule, because he travels quite a bit. And so it's like, we can't even get into a small group.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then we kind of just got to the point where we're like, this isn't working. We're going to go find another church where, you know, we can get involved in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And the COVID hit. So, you know, and the one we're at, they do online services, but half the time it cuts out and we're just like, oh, I like sleeping in. So I mean, we as a family, we are very disconnected because of that. But
yeah,
last fall, I kind of started feeling that little nudge to get back into doing my own quiet time. And that's when I started getting this, it's time to write that book. It's time to write that book. And as I, you know, I'm reading and doing my quiet times, I'm getting these messages, and I've shared a few of them in the Stepping Up to the Call group and
powerful
and stuff. But I just have this vision. I guess it's like Titus 2, Proverbs 31, older women teaching the younger women. But I think it's not just two generations. We've got 3, 4, 5 generations living right now. And we have this wonderful technology that we didn't have before. Mm-hmm. We've got Zoom. And Zoom is not the only platform. We have Zoom, we have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have all of these things where we can be pulling people in together who are in that same point, and they can do it on whatever schedule they need it to be.
Right. And I'm even seeing that, like, today's a great example of, I know there's never a right day or a right hour, you know, that's where, and I'm just going to throw this out, that's where we all have to be very much pivoting right now and adaptable. Whatever we're doing, we have to understand this has to work wherever people are. And your people are going to be probably very similar to my people that are, you know, my tribe. I think because our heartbeats are very similar. In fact, you probably are going to have to be on my platform soon because, you know, and I know Janelle is for sure. But my thought is, you know, that our people are very similar. They are busy. Okay, last night, you will love that this was the book I was writing a paper on. It was The Transformational Church. And we've been studying different church models and stuff and in school. Of course, I've been doing this the whole time I've been in school. But do you know what bothers me the most is that, you know, churches know their numbers and a lot of them look at their numbers, but they don't listen to what the people are saying. Like, hey, my daughter wants to be involved as a teenager. Are you kidding me? I just can't get it. All I know is that when I hear something like that, I'm thinking God's saying pivot, shift. There's something that he's wanting there. And I don't think it's by accident you're seeing some of the pain of that. The other thing I just want to throw back out, and Janelle may want to jump in too, is I'm thinking, wow, the void that you felt. I felt it too. I felt that too. We never lived in this. Well, let me take that back. Maybe three, maybe four. Maybe my numbers aren't right either, Mandy. But we might have lived in the same city as our family, maybe 4 or 5 years of our marriage. And so me moving to Florida this year is the first time I've really been, I mean, for the whole time I was in Nashville, I think my daughter lived there for a little bit, but she was like so busy. I see her more now. She's in North Carolina and I don't see her much, you know, but then when she was like literally the next block over and I was from where I was working, is where she lived. And it was like, so this in our culture, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And so like for me, this has like been the first time that I've really been able to like babysit regularly for the grandbabies, help the kids have date nights, you know, I laugh because I mean, I don't know if you, how much of the post-it note part you got to hear me say, but like Oliver now, 4.5-year-old, you know, I work my kids with little things like post-it notes, papers, making books, notebooks, all of that stuff. But
I introduced my girls to Trello and they're like Trello monsters now. It's like,
still need to learn Trello. I got kind of into
it's like
that.
Digital post-it notes. It is.
Yeah. Sounds amazing. I've got to learn Trello. I've got to learn this because it sounds like it's a passion. I would get addicted. I would do that rather than some of the other stuff people do.
Yeah, so my daughter I got home last night after or we went out for my birthday dinner. That's what it was. And we got home and she's like, Mom, did you see my Trello board? Because I made them add me to their boards because we put their homeschool assignments on there because I can check their Trello board from my phone when I'm out walking dogs. And she's like, I made it all colorful. So she made like each little note a different color. Like it's a post-it note. You can put stickers on it. You can put pictures on it.
Oh,
this is my 15-year-old who just passed her written driving test. And she's like, Trello.
See, I love it.
She also made green fire in the kitchen sink last week. So. Oh.
But, you know, you
chemistry. She's a sophomore. It's chemistry years.
Yeah. Yeah. That's too cute. Yeah. I cannot believe she's getting so, they're getting so old, older. They're getting older. Oh my goodness. That I blink and everybody's kids grow up. You know, I think about the multi-generations and I think there is a void. We, many of us either are, you know, the lives of our parents or whatever that is. And also I do believe God puts other godly women in our life or godly men in our life that are teaching what they're supposed to teach and impart into our lives. And so there is that too, but our culture, for us to be people who want connection and want community, there's a fight for that. It's really hard. It is really hard. And I feel like that's a failure. I wrote on that last night. It's a failure in the church. I believe it's one of our failures. And you have to say that to really overcome that as a community, you know? And so anyway, but I love
it. And I would add, it is a failure on all of the generations involved because, you know, as the older generation, you would think that they would just feel comfortable to go and say, hey, I want to mentor you, but they're afraid to offend the young ones. The young ones are either too proud or they think that the person ahead of them is going to say no. And so they don't ask.
Yeah.
And it is. It's on every generation that you bear the responsibility for where you're at. And that means you have to go look for it if you're the one wanting the mentor. And you have to look for people who are coming behind you if you're the one who's mentoring too. And I think,
yeah,
you know, it does go both ways. We do bear personal responsibility for everything.
Mm-hmm. But I love your passion of seeing it because I think God's going to do something amazing with that. I think it's big, really big. That's good. And really, Janelle, you're not far off of that either. And I know you guys may have gotten to know each other a little in some of the things that we've been doing, but share who you are.
I will do that because from the very beginning, God has had his hand on my life. So as a child, for 8 to 9 years, starting at about age 4, my stepfather sexually abused me right under my mother's nose. She didn't protect me. That's a hard thing. So from age 3, 4, until just a month before I turned 13, my childhood taken from me. And he was caught and he took his life because he was facing 4 years of prison.
Wow.
So at 13, it all came to a head. And I thank God for his protection. Story is so deep, but God kept me from so much. He kept me through that. And so there's much ministry there and God has used me there. And so I know that's definitely in my future as life moved on for those next few years. And as my mother struggled, because her husband had betrayed her and killed himself. And so the things in her life led us to move from Minnesota to Alabama. And it was a God thing. I absolutely see God in my life over that. Because that's where I met the love of my life. And So in that, because we didn't have a good solid home life, I ended up teenage marriage, pregnancy, to a godly man who was a man. You know, we all walk in this flesh. So not a good relationship with my mother, young mother. I graduated and had a child about 7 months later, 9 months later. And so, yes, a month before I turned 19, I had my first child. Second child 2 years later, planned. And so my two boys, again, I grew up with sisters. And so here's boys. What in the world do I do with this? that literally crossed my mind more than once. And so, you know, the financial difficulties of our early marriage, God being faithful, the things that he taught me about himself in those years, when even the church background that we were in, we eventually moved out of, you know, did not have good roots. But God is so faithful and he's still reaching out. And so I did, in these years, I did have a good marriage. He was a minister. He was still a man, but he loved me. He was the man that God meant for me to be married to for those 20 years, because, I needed that love. Frankie put me on a pedestal and he never took me off of it. He saw something in me from the age I met him when I was 17. And he saw something in me, and it was beautiful. People still now talk about my sisters are so jealous because they've never had what Frankie was. Just special. He was very special. He loved people. He had a nickname for almost everybody, you know, and so when he comes up, people have wonderful memories of him. So anyway, as we're progressing and we start getting more involved in ministry, because, you know, when we married, his traveling and preaching, you know, he came home and to just be at home. And so he worked some in the church, but anyway, so we ended up moving, getting deeper involved in ministry. And I started seeing the pain that happens in church ministry. And it's awful and it's terrible, but God is faithful. Mm-hmm. Heals and he loves. As that started, God also started healing me from the abuse of my childhood. And God started helping me to see him as Father. That is still an ongoing thing, but it is a beautiful thing. And so, because, you know, I don't have to perform to gain his love. He loves me as I am. And so, you know, we continued growing, continued in ministry. We actually, Frankie started, we moved to church organizations. It was a good thing. And so we started licensing process. And so we started walking through that, more ministry responsibilities. I started leading worship. You know, thank God for opening that door for me to express myself and for him to heal me in the so many things that we did. So walking more and more in church leadership, I did start homeschooling in, the boys were in first and kindergarten and first grade when I started homeschooling with our move. And that was all a God thing. It's just awesome. His fingerprints all over my life. And so, yeah, the homeschooling and the church leadership and the ministry. And there were some family things that came up. My grandmother was taken out of my mother's care and I stepped in and it was awful and it made things awful with my mother. That was her choice. And the last time I saw her, she was withholding her own mother's belongings we had to ask for each thing specifically. She wouldn't give all the things that Graham needed, even things she needed. I had to go to the store and buy things that she needed that were just in a house a few miles down the road. It was awesome. And the last place I saw my mother was in a courtroom day before Thanksgiving in Gadsden, Alabama, making a fool of herself. And it was awful. And the last time I talked to her was on Mother's Day. And during that whole time, my husband, he, you should do this. And my heart, I'm like, I can't do anything that I might not get to ask forgiveness for. God knew that on Father's Day, she would die.
Mm.
9 years old. And she had suffered with diabetes. And so it was so hard. And the pain, as I told my grandmother, the pain that came out of her mouth, it was awful. But my grandmother had always kind of been closer. I'd been closer to her. And so all this pain, but God is so good and he's so faithful. And so as walked through all of that pain and even my husband wasn't too sympathetic because my mother had mistreated me so much. 2 weeks after she died, he told me to get over it because he was tired of seeing me hurt. He knew he messed up. He called my sisters. He knew he had really messed up. But anyway, we got through that. We were having difficulties with our 16-year-old, our oldest, all through the time with my grandmother and my mother. Oh, it was, God, is there anything else that can go wrong? So it was overwhelmed, but God is faithful. We had a good pastoral staff that was walking us through this. So we had good support. And 18 months after my mother died, my husband died. My entire world shaken.
Yeah.
I remember the night he died, and oh, we were so surrounded by family, but after everybody was gone, and as I sat in a chair holding my Bible, just the tornado of thoughts and the grief and the overwhelm. And yet over the next few days, God took care of me one thought at a time. You know, he'd remind me of this and he'd remind me of that and just took care of me in such a beautiful way. And Psalm 23 was the only thing for a month that I could even read or comprehend. He's so faithful. And so as I walked through, you know, again, pastoral staff that walked me through the next many years, and in a church full of sweet little widows, and beyond the hugs, maybe because I was 37 years old, maybe because I was so young, they didn't know how to reach out to me. I'm not sure. But maybe because I was a ministry wife, you know, maybe they felt intimidated. Nevertheless, God is faithful. My grief was so overwhelming. It did affect my health. Within 9 months, I started having severe exhaustion, and then another few months, gastrointestinal issues that I still walk through. God has helped me. God is healing. Healing has been taking place for about 5 years. And so again, so faithful.
Yeah.
But as I started walking in the healing through the grief, as someone else would walk through that door, my heart would just go out to them because I knew that nobody else knew what they were going through. And so I'm not so much in the covering them up and overwhelming them in the midst of the beginnings. But I know that after a few weeks, everybody else's life goes on and you're stuck in your reality. And so, you know, so I have many friends now that I reached out to, you know, the first anything that a widow goes through is so difficult. And you know, some people are stronger than others and or put on a brave face and a brave front. But just to know that somebody else understands, you know, I've got one friend that her husband's been gone about 8 or 9 years now, but in those first few years, I'd send her a card on each anniversary or, you know, the anniversary of the death or a wedding anniversary or a birthday. And she would, in church, you just know. And I said, God knows. And I said, and yes, I do know. I do feels. And that somebody still remembered and that somebody acknowledges the pain that they're still going through. And so the one thing I haven't said, which is the passion and the crux of what I do, is in the pain, God gave me hope. When you feel so hopeless, everything in those first couple of months, everything that I had known about God and church was shaken. But I immediately made a decision. I had already been through so much that, as I've chronicled here, I had been through so much that I knew God was real and I knew he was true. And so, but I was at a point that either I'm going to believe what I've known and what I've lived, that God is who he says he is and who he has been to me, or I'm going to walk away from everything I've known and I'm going to be a bitter, ugly, terrible, terribly miserable person. And so in the pain, I chose to hang on because of the hope in his word, because the hope of who he is. And so that brings me to where he's brought me, that now he's ready for me to start sharing that beyond what I've been doing. So
I totally agree. I want to mention something to both of you that I just thought as I was listening to this, because I was listening to you and I was thinking, man, every bit of that you just said could be transcribed and put into the perfect sales letter, or it could be put into the perfect book, or the perfect, you know, like there are like 50 ideas there you could write, teach, share. Yeah. Each of you. I mean, I'm thinking that go back and listen to what you guys just shared. I mean, it just hit me as you were sharing. It wasn't even my point to it, really, but here we go. Ideas. I'm getting them as I'm sitting here with you guys, which is beautiful. And I do have to confess, this is like one of my sweet spaces. You know, have you ever had those moments that if you could do this like all day long, you would do this? This is one of those things I would do all day long. And so it's part of why I do coaching and part of where I even see what I do going, where I see it going, because I love this. But go back later when we have these available and listen to what you just shared. Because I think there's a myriad of ideas and topics, and there's phrases you guys just shared that I think are going to be important. What I would say is copy that you would put into your website, that you would develop as ideas and things to share. Because you know something, part of, and by the way, this afternoon, I'm teaching at noon for one of my friend's summits that she has coming up. And I'm teaching on marketing. And one of the things I share in there is that it is that being able to share who you are and let other people share who they are, that's marketing. It's, you know, people think marketing is this, I don't know. I get scared of the word myself. The fact that they ask me to speak on it makes me kind of go, oh! And I do this all the time. You know what I mean? But it's kind of funny because I remember the first times I heard marketing, I remember getting intimidated and feeling like overwhelmed. And yet here's what I want to share with you guys. It's about connecting and making relationships. It's the same thing we're supposed to do in the kingdom of God. We're supposed to connect and build community, build relationships. Just like the children of Israel were tribes, we're to build our sweet tribes. And this is God's picture of how he does things. But one of the ways that people are going to, if they're going to convert as, quote, customers of yours, or they're going to convert as community of yours, they're going to have to know, like, and trust you. And I'm telling you guys, tap into what you just shared, because your story is so important. It is the thing that I believe drives us. That's where I wanted to kind of go back to that. That helps us to even know what ideas really need that you're going to come up with your very best ideas today, but, and they're going to come off of some of those thoughts. But also, when you share your story, it has a power that sets you apart. It's just like what I was just sharing. There's no accident that you are here, or that you are moving forward. You feel that call in your heart. First of all, it's no accident, because God has no accidents. He's so crazy about you. And he loves you because he's seen the pain that you've been through. And I just feel like I can almost sense him just being, how do I describe it? Like weeping over you. You know what I mean? People want to get God as this high and lofty, detached, disengaged. No. You know, it says Jesus wept. And I think the reason it showed us that is that's God incarnate weeping. He, I believe, wept over all the pain you've ever gone through, all the loss you've ever experienced. And I believe that if we could see his heart today, I share this because I just feel it in my spirit. If we can see his heart today, he's weeping over so many people who are broken and hurting and alone. They are without hope. I mean, you look at the suicide numbers in our culture right now, they're going out the roof, but it's because people are not made for isolation and to be put in time out in case you might get sick. They're not made for this. They're made for connection and relationship. They're made to have people come alongside of them and invest in them. You know, the Bible talks about, he wakens me morning by morning with a word for the weary. That there's another version, and you may have heard me share this recently, that he wakens me morning by morning to give me a word to sustain. That means to carry, to come alongside, to be connected with and bear the burdens, that helps someone to be empowered, helps someone to keep going, help someone to know that they've got somebody on their side, help them to know that they're not alone, that they're not weird, or I hate this word, crazy, because they feel what they feel, that they are genuinely not alone. He says in scripture, one of the first things you hear him say about mankind is it's not good for man to be alone. I believe that in marriage, don't get me wrong, but I don't think that's the only way that he intends for relationship to take place. I believe that there is power. Both of you are called. I can feel it from what you say. You're called to mentoring and spiritual mothering. You are called to that. That's part of your positioning in the body of Christ, is to be a mother, to be a mother to those who are orphans in the spirit, or even in their relational world. You're going to be that person that teaches them the good things, that comes along and teaches them how to love their husbands. And man, hey, Mandy, tell me, do you feel the love of husbands and the appreciation for marriage when you hear Janelle speak? Is that not powerful? Absolutely.
Yes, it is. It is. And the powerful effect of a husband who loves well.
Yes. Yes.
You know that he passed away that many years ago and she still feels his love. That is powerful.
It is beautiful. It is so beautiful. And Janelle, don't pull back from that. Don't pull back from that. I tell you what, I just feel like I want to say this. The people who get uncomfortable with that, because I've had people, I was engaged to get married, and March, we canceled the wedding. He canceled the wedding a third time. But we canceled the wedding and we broke up. And I want to tell you the pain I felt coming out of that relationship. I can't tell you the number of people that were just so uncaring, people that I trusted that had been through a lot of stuff with me who bailed on me because it was so uncomfortable. And I think somewhat they thought I deserved it or something. It was the weirdest thing because, you know, I have my own lies too that I believe, but it was a very lonely place, and I'm thankful for what God did to bring people into my life and to have, you know, people speak into my life and there to step in and love on me. But I think what I saw was that people, they have certain things that they're just surely uncomfortable with when we go through it. And they just want it over quick, you know, and I'm talking about, it can be like when I was losing babies, it was very much like that season where people just did not know what to say. They didn't know what to do. They wanted it over. They wanted me okay again. And I guess I just really struggle with those moments. Maybe that's part of why I do what I do and why part of my calling, it goes back to what I'm saying. Okay, where's your pain? What's your story? Where's your pain been? What have you felt? Because I find it very hard to believe that people can step in and have a pulpit if they haven't had a personal pain. It's not a strong pulpit without the personal pain. I really believe we've got to take care of personal before we go public. We've got to be in private. What's in private is going to be the message, and it's going to be that ministry. And so I just want to encourage you guys. This is powerful. I felt the pain that you guys have gone through. And I also can see, here's what I see. I see you guys stepping into a beautiful place where there's going to be people that when they find your message, they're going to say, I need her to come alongside of me. Not, you know, they have God. They have God, but God is choosing to use you. He's choosing to use you as his arms and as his mouthpiece, as a person that they can see, and they can see his heartbeat coming through you. You can communicate, I get his pain for you. He feels pain for you. I remember one time I was ministering downtown. I was ministering to, how do I say that? I'm going to try to say this and I want it to sound right. Okay. But it was a guy who dresses up like a girl prostitute and he does prostitution. And we were casting out demons and all sorts of things. And they asked me to come over and pray over him because he wanted to be free. And as I put my hand on his chest to pray over him, I a lot of times have this happen where I'll just all of a sudden just get this download and I'll see a scene in their life. And it is part of, I think, me being called to be a spiritual mother in the body of Christ as well. But what I saw was not just breaking my heart, but I could feel God's heart all broken for this person. And, weeping over him because I could see him. He was abused as like a little three-year-old little boy and I could see it. And he looked at me, he said, "You see?" And I said, "Yeah, I do." And I said, "What I see too is that God is crying for you. He's weeping. He was there. He's there for you. He loves you." And that, everybody gets hot and messy right then. You know what I'm saying? It was a moment. But I believe that that's the moments that can change our culture right now. It's being vulnerable. I feel like a lot of the body of Christ, and especially those in leadership, they want to have everything shiny and perfect, and they want to have their messages out there. It's like it's detached and it's disengaged, and they wonder why it doesn't, quote, sell, or why they don't have the big crowds, or why they, whatever it is, they are not happy with getting real and vulnerable. And I believe vulnerability is brave. I believe vulnerability is where we're going to have the real ministry. So I just want to encourage you in that, because your tribe, your people need that. Okay, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to cut this for just a moment. We're going to break on this recording.